This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, best-selling author of Retire Secure and the Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once, Then Never Again. Now on air and worldwide, paytaxeslater.com. Now get ready to talk smart money.
And welcome to the Lang Money Hour. I'm Dan Weinberg, along with CPA and attorney Jim Lang. And this week, we're tackling the subject of investing for doctors. And joining us for that discussion is one of the foremost experts in that area, Dr. Jim Dolly, a Utah-based physician. In 2011, Dr. Dolly started a website called The White Coat Investor, which now has over 350,000 page views per month. And last year, Dr. Dolly published his first book, titled The White Coat Investor, A Doctor's Guide to Personal Finance and Investing. Since its publication, the book has remained number one or number two in its Amazon categories. Now, during the next hour or so, Dr. Dolly will be sharing his personal story and his advice for doctors, including things like how to get out from under medical school loans, how best to structure your practice, how to buy the right type of insurance, and choosing the right financial advisors. And with that, let's say hello to Jim Lang and welcome Dr. Jim Dolly.
Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I'll tell you, you wrote a heck of a book. I was reading it both last night and today, and you have some great information. I'd say it's great information for everybody, but particularly doctors. And so I would recommend, by the way, if you're a physician, don't even think about it. Just go to Amazon, go to White Coat Investor, and by Jim Dolly, that's D-A-H-L-E, and just buy the book. And the other thing that I would recommend is to go to his website, which is whitecoatinvestor.com. Again, that's whitecoatinvestor.com. He has all types of great information on the website. Again, oriented towards physicians, but a lot of us can benefit, and I learned some stuff from reading the book. So, notwithstanding that it could be for everybody, early on you say that physicians have some character flaws that make them bad investors. Can you tell us what some of the character flaws of physicians might be that might make them bad investors?
Well, there's a few things that make physicians particularly bad at investing. The first is probably that they tend to be overconfident. Physicians are in general people that are pretty smart and work hard, but they make this mistake that they assume that because they know a lot about one thing, they know a lot about everything. And so they assume that they can also outsmart the market, which turns out not to be a very smart idea when you really look into the data. Other problems physicians have is it's a bit of an intellectual failure. They'll read all kinds of peer-reviewed literature in their field, whether that's cardiology or general surgery or whatever they do. But they don't realize that there's an academic literature within personal finance and investing as well, and they have no idea what that says. And so that's a bit of an intellectual failure that can be overcome with some time spent reading and studying about it, or with the help of a quality advisor. One other issue that physicians often have is they tend to be very trusting. They assume that every professional in the world works by the Hippocratic Oath like they do. And usually takes getting burned two or three times for a doctor to realize that there are many professions in this world that not only don't spend a decade in training, but also don't necessarily always have a fiduciary duty to the physician, meaning they would do the right thing for them no matter what.
Well, we should pick up on the concept of fiduciary duty. The only thing that I wanted to mention is the issue of overconfidence and an intellectual failure to take all information into account is not just unique to physicians. I'm thinking engineers. Man, the engineers think because they're very bright in one area that necessarily translates to another. The other thing that you bring up, though, the fiduciary duty, that's very important, because I know you are not a big fan of different financial products that are, quote, investment products, such as annuities or cash value life insurance. And there is a difference between a fiduciary advisor that not only has the moral but the legal obligation to sell or encourage clients to buy what they think is appropriate for the client, not what is good for them. So I think that your idea of going to a fiduciary advisor is very good advice.
Absolutely. The biggest issue, I think, in the financial advisory business today is there are far too many people who are basically salesmen rather than advisors, whether they're selling annuities or whether they're selling cash value life insurance or whether they're selling high-fee loaded mutual funds. Basically, their training is all in sales rather than personal finance and investing and advising, as you might see from somebody with a a CFP or a CFA or a CHFC certification. And it really becomes difficult because you actually have to know something about investing before you can actually pick out a good advisor. And far too many people just go looking for the first money guy they run into and kind of blindly trust him and often end up with a bunch of products they really don't want.
Well, interestingly enough, I got your name from John Bogle, who is, of course, the founder of Vanguard. And he is a big believer in all advisors having a fiduciary duty. Now, that's not the way it is, but if, you know, I asked him if he was czar, what would he do? And he said, I would make all advisors be fiduciary advisors, meaning they have to look out for the good of the client. And in addition, he would have them all reveal to the nickel how much money they make on any given transaction or even just manage money. And by the way, I agree with him completely on that. And that also seems to be consistent with the advice in your book.
That's correct. In fact, I even take it one step further. I'm a huge fan of John Bogle and started reading his books some time ago. But even on my website, every year I have a state of the blog post where I actually reveal where all the income on my blog comes from. And so a lot of people find that a little bit reassuring just because they know exactly what I'm making money from and they can see what, you know, how that could bias my opinions. And I wish every advisor would do that. And, you know, it's a little bit easier when you're a fee-only advisor, obviously, than when you're a commission-based advisor. But I think a lot of people, doctors in particular, would think twice before purchasing a cash value life insurance policy if they had any idea how big the commission on that policy was.
And I think the same might be said of certain annuity products that might pay a 10% commission or other financial products. I mean, I actually am a big believer that clients should know how much the fees are. And I'm also prefer the model where it is basically a fee for service rather than a commission on a sales product.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of fee only. In fact, that's probably the first place if people can just get that much right in choosing a financial advisor, they're about 75% of the way there.
Well, that might be a lot. I actually think there's a big difference in the quality of advisors, even fee advisors, but we're on the same wavelength about fees. The other thing that you talk about physicians is you call it the big squeeze, and you talk about tuition and interest rates and starting salaries. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, we all think that doctors are, you know, they're gonna be just stinking rich and they have it so easy. And then you read your book, it sounds like they're basically paupers for the first 10 years of their professional life.
Boy, I wish it only lasted 10 years.
sorry about that.
it's really disturbing, even for older docs, to realize how things have changed now. But it's now getting to the point where tuition has climbed so high and the terms on student loans have gotten so bad that medical students are now routinely coming out with $300,000, $400,000, $450,000. My record is $680,000 in student loans. And those are at 6 and 8% interest. It's just unbelievable how quickly that can spiral upward in residency when you're not making enough money to even pay the interest on the loans. But to start your professional life basically with a mortgage on a huge house, but no huge house, can really handicap you quite a bit. So you're getting the squeeze from the education side. And then, of course, like with many professions, medicine has seen a trending down in salaries, particularly with the move into how a lot of docs are now employed rather than owners of their own practice. And so with increasing costs to become a doctor and decreasing costs as a doctor or decreasing salary as a doctor, and then with the increase in expenses to comply with all the new compliance issues in medicine, it's really become difficult for a lot of docs to actually get ahead. it certainly is not a guarantee of wealth like perhaps it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. Still, if doctors will manage their income well, they can still climb out of the hole they start their career in, but far too many grow into their income way too fast to do that.
Well, the other thing that you pointed out, which was to me a pretty shocking statistic, is that physician salaries are down 28% after adjusting for inflation. And as you mentioned, more and more are actually taking jobs because of government interference, the high cost of insurance, etc. So that's
correct. It's really become difficult in some fields. In fact, there are a lot of medical schools in this country whose graduates cannot afford to be pediatricians. They literally cannot pay back their loans on a pediatrician's salary.
Yeah, that's actually, and I was going to ask about that later on, but now that we're on that topic, you actually said that the decision of which field of medicine doctors should enter is, other than choosing their wife, the most important decision there is. Could you expand on that? Because I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, I think it really is, because not only will it affect your lifestyle for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years, but it will also affect your income. And the issue isn't that I want doctors to choose their salary based on how much it pays and what kind of a lifestyle it leads. The issue is that medical students, almost as a rule, don't consider those two issues at all in medical school. You are never more optimistic about life and never more idealistic than when you're in medical school. And so for most doctors, they choose a specialty based on what they find interesting in a four-week rotation or what system of the body they find most interesting to study. And while I do think that it's very important that you love the work you're going to be doing for hours and hours on end, it's also important to inject a little bit of realism into the formula as well, and realize that 10 years out of residency, how much you make and how much call you're taking and how many nights you spend up in the hospital are going to matter to you much, much more than they matter during medical school. And well, so that's the only message I'm trying to get across to medical students, so they at least consider those factors.
Well, I think I
run into too many people going into primary care with $400,000 in debt, and they literally may not be out of debt until after their kids are through college.
And you actually went through that personal choice yourself, which I thought was pretty interesting. And the two areas that you were considering, OBGYN and emergency medicine, just seemed so significantly different. Can you tell us how you made a choice when you were considering those alternatives?
Well, they certainly are different. Certainly going back, I'm glad I chose emergency medicine. I think if I went back to do it again, my second choice probably would have been anesthesiology. I'm not sure why I didn't look at it more closely in medical school, but I find that a lot more interesting throughout residency in my career than OBGYN. But I guess what I really liked about OB was you had all these wonderful moments where people are, you know, babies are coming into the world. It's just so much more rewarding, I think, than working with a lot of people who are on death's doorstep. Almost every family you deal with is wonderfully happy with the outcome. And so I found that very rewarding in medical school, and so considered it very seriously. But in retrospect, I'm definitely glad I did emergency medicine, as it fits me much better.
All right. Getting back to the money part, you also talk about a lot of physicians trying to outguess, not just physicians, everybody, trying to outguess the market, and then you go back to index funds. Is that what you think basically most investors and most physicians and actually all of our listeners should be doing?
Pretty much. I mean,